watching him pitch.
Now, back to Cofield and Company.
My brain can't even process how hard he throws. Like, it is incredible, and it's such a joy to watch, and he's a great baseball player, but an even better person.
Live from NBA Summer League.
We're from the town with the great football team. We cheer the Pittsburgh Steelers. Winning's the habit, not only a dream. Go out and get them Steelers.
Pirates.
Sing it. Come on.
Gorillas,
that's it.
Gorillas are here. Why not? It's Pittsburgh. Storm. Little polka. They got a baseball player. They got more than one baseball player. They got some good baseball players. Paul Skeens and Livy Dunn. Isn't that great for baseball?
It is.
Did you watch a game last night?
I watched Paul Skeens pitch. And then I watched highlights the next morning. So this morning. So, no, I didn't watch the game. I don't know. I don't find it. Look, I enjoy baseball. I didn't want to watch.
It's like all All-Star games.
Yeah.
I mean, this one means a little more than the NFL. It's just, you know. By the way, I don't know what. Who was it? Joe Burrow was talking about having some extended break in, like, week 13. He's like, oh, we should do the Pro Bowl then. Like, there's no Pro Bowl.
Right.
Like, in the middle of a season, do you think anyone's going to go on some mini vacation and go do skills competitions or the latter third of the season? He was talking about having a deal or how you get creative with the schedule with 18 regular season games.
Right, yeah.
So it was an idea. It's, you know, it's worth talking about.
Hey, look, no idea is a bad idea. Just throw it to the wall, see if it sticks, talk about it, work it out. Great things can come from it. And I will say, to be fair to Major League Baseball, the All-Star game of all the major sports is the one in which you probably get, you know, you do get the best effort because baseball is not a high-impact sport, so you feel okay about it. You're not going to be at risk of getting injured in a really big way. So you probably get a good product, but, you know, it's the All-Star game.
They took one of our lights away. We had, like, three powerful TV lights for our high-tech video. Thank God you are really white.
Who, me?
Yeah.
I've darkened up. I don't know what you're talking
about. Getting outside at all?
I think I'm darker than you.
You probably are, but that's not a good. Yeah. Don't
clear that bar. No, but that doesn't mean you don't get to take shots. I go outside.
Sure
I soak up the sun. I explore the mountains, go in pools,
I don't.
Do things like that.
I go to pools, but I don't explore any mountains. I'll tell you that right now. That was MLB Network with Amsinger, with Libby Dunn, and Paul Skeens not talking.
Yeah.
And then the Pittsburgh polka, which I'll have to give credit to someone. I'll look it up.
I'll have to say, too, the thing that drove me nuts about yesterday. We get it, okay? You don't like the uniforms. It's the seventh inning, and I'm still seeing tweets about the uniforms. They're wearing them. You've made your opinion known. We get it. You want to watch them play in their uniforms. Oh, what happened to the good old days? Shut up! We get it. No matter what you do, no matter what uniform is put out there, you're not going to like it. We understand. You don't need to do it the entire game. It was insane.
That rant right there is a best of Cofield and Company from like 7 years ago. You did the same thing 7 years ago. Some uniform bitching and moaning.
Oh, it is
all the time.
You're never going to make anybody happy.
No.
There are uniforms that look just fine. Like, I think what the Falcons wear are just fine. The color scheme's fine. It looks good. It's simple, whatever. The day it came out, that's all people did was complain. The Rams uniforms, all they did was complain. I don't think that there has been a uniform. Maybe the Kraken. Maybe the Kraken was one where everybody was kind of like, this is a good uniform. Everything. Can we just stop? Who cares? We can play naked for all I care. Let's just watch the games.
People on social media care?
They don't. They just want to complain.
That too. Our Aces. Losers on the way out of the first half of the season. 16-8 overall. Solid, but not like they've done. And last night they met up with a Chicago team, I think, that got very fortunate. Got very fortunate. Remember, Cardoso, the 6'7 player, actually selected before Reese. Mm-hmm. They should have taken Reese the first time around, and the Sparks absolutely should have taken Reese. And I'm not judging Cam Brink because she went down with an ACL. Reese on the floor is going to be better,
mm-hmm.
And Reese from a marketing standpoint is better. Brink's very marketable. But I don't know how the league let her get to 7. Mateo, he works the games with the broadcast, and he said off the air a couple minutes ago, he's like, Angel Reese, big.
Yeah.
And I respond, I'm like, she is a rough, tough customer with an edge on her. And, yeah, she's got to finish more around the rim, and she's grabbing some of her own misses. But she is tough in the lane. And, you know, this is kind of that evolution of the WNBA player, man. Bigger, stronger, explosive.
Well, and this is why – so everybody who has been pushing back on Angel Reese's candidacy for Rookie of the Year, and the argument has been, well, she doesn't rebound her own misses. You know that takes, like, skill, right? You know that takes an ability to rebound your own missed shot attempts. If it was easy, everybody would do it. But she's awesome. I've never seen somebody that skilled in terms of getting their own misses and being able to have as many opportunities of doing it.
She's got to get better. 40% from an inside player is kind of silly.
She was also
– her outside shot is ridiculously flawed. I like to bash this woman. I don't know what Kim Mulkey was doing over the years. Like, fix her shot. But she's got to get better, and they're going to fix her shot. Like, they're going to fix the shot. The perimeter shot is just the launch kind of point.
Sure.
And it's way off to the side. They'll fix it. She's big enough. She's not a 5'4 guard, so she doesn't have to do this push shot with her left hand.
No, but there's a couple things. First off, I mean, she's improved her efficiency, though. She was floating around 30%. So she has climbed up in terms of her percentage from the floor. And that does still have to get better if you're an interior player, like you said. The other thing, to your point about Mulkey, I mean, I don't know what she does in terms of player development, because we saw Haley Van Lith go over there too and like regress as a player, and then had to leave the program to go somebody else
somewhere else. Out.
Yep, to TCU. So I don't think the track record of people going to play for Kim Mulkey and developing into something better than what they were is very strong.
By the way, I'm going to be a typical guy, right, in saying this. If anyone out there is like, "What is he talking about with her shot? I bet you he couldn't do it." If I got to shoot against Angel Reese from 15 feet, all 15-foot jumpers, because three-pointers are – that's a long range. 15 feet, I think I would do okay. With my left hand.
Would you be able to jump?
We're just shooting.
Well, yeah, but you said jumpers, so I was just
– Are you asking me if I can jump?
Yeah.
No, I really don't need to.
Is that the big Papa shot at Dave & Buster's? That's how far is that? That's 15
no
feet,
idea.
Right?
By the way, I didn't mention the biggest key with that left-hand shot is the ball. I shoot the WNBA ball.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'd beat her. I'd do okay. Now, she should destroy me as a natural lefty in, like, months if she puts in the work and if she gets with a shot coach. But even with some of those limitations, it doesn't matter because she's an inside player, and so much of that is drive and, you know, sort of – what's the word I'm looking for? Instinct.
Mm-hmm.
In tracking the ball. That's why some people are great rebounders and others are not so great rebounders. Right. She's really good, and she was a big part of the win last night. Carter's great. She has taken this weird circuitous journey to land with the Sky, but she finished? 34? She destroyed the Aces. And, you know, it was interesting. I saw UNLV girl. I want to get this right because there's two of them.
Yes.
Lori. Take a picture at the game. Did you see this picture, Willie?
No.
Oh, I got to show this to you.
I've seen pictures of Willie. Let me see.
No, at the game.
No, I know. I saw a picture of Willie last night is what I'm saying, but I don't know if it's the one you're referencing.
Did you see who was at the game?
No.
Celebrity-wise.
Oh, Usher.
Yeah.
Did Willie get a picture with Usher? Is he, like, chilling with him?
It's better than that.
Oh, no.
Mateo, you didn't see this either?
Let me see
no?
this.
No, hold on. I'm going to show it to you. I got it right here. Sorry, I wasn't ready with it.
Oh, I'm looking right now, yeah.
Wait, do you see it?
I'm looking at it, yeah. Here. He's talking to Usher. Or he's talking to Coach K.
He's talking to Coach K, and Lori's like, Willie, Usher's like right there. I think Willie responded, I always catch up with Coach K, so sorry. I didn't have time for now I'm going to blow the joke. What's Usher's first name? Raymond.
Yeah.
He said, I didn't have time for Raymond.
What a humble brag.
I always what a great did. Photo, though. How awesome is that?
It's great. I always catch up with Coach K.
This is the best show photo with celebrities since, and it is better than Adam Hill years ago during a UFL game lecturing a fan.
Oh, yeah.
On, who was it? J.P. Lossman.
It was.
And two rows in front of him, Denzel Washington is sitting watching the game. And Adam has, go down to him. But he knew receptive audience, some lady in the crowd, J.P. Lossman.
Yeah, back in the day, there was a really good intern that put together a good piece on the ESPN Las Vegas blog that had used that photo as a as a header photo. Yeah.
I wonder what they're doing now. We had a blog?
Yeah.
Oh, we kind of do now. We moved it because, yeah, it's more effective out on. That's why we did it.
Wait, we have a blog?
IG, TikTok.
Oh, I was going to say, I've offered to write like 1,000 times.
We can put stories up if we want. We'll get to it eventually. We had a good redesign. They did a really good job on the new LVSportsNetwork.com. Go check it out, Cofield & Company. We've got Best Of. That turned into a promo. Archives, videos, eventually pictures. Twitter handles. Everyone is on the show.
So was Willie the person that Asia Wilson was talking about after the game?
I don't know what the hell happened here. How much do I have to set up this bite? I mean, the one who sent it over.
Nothing really. I mean, it's after the game. Asia Wilson clearly upset about the result, I think, about what happened last night. And the hot mic picks her up talking about some folks meeting Usher.
As Reese was getting some love from her coach. And Asia Wilson did all that she could do with another double-double, 28 points, 14 rebounds. But Usher and Asia Wilson getting a little love right here in the house.
Wait, is that all that happened?
Yeah, so I'm glad.
What were the beeps and the was the beginning part?
They ain't done bleep all day, but they got time to take a mother bleeping picture with Usher.
Oh, really?
Was what she said. It's awesome. Yep. Because that is, and a lot of people tried to frame it as, like, I think for the win on USA Today was like, watch Asia Wilson have fun and joke around with their team. Like, no, she's a competitor. She wants to win. She's pissed. No. And it's like a lot of people brought up Kobe. No, like, give her moment. She is an intense athlete who demands perfection because she demands it of herself every day. You lost. You ain't done nothing all day, but now you got time to take pictures with Usher? That's awesome. That's a cool moment. Don't take away from it. Don't try to soften the blow. This is athletics. She was mad. Don't let it happen again.
That's insulting to try to soften it.
Yes.
She's having fun. She just dropped a mother blanker.
Right.
Fun.
My favorite part about that clip, too, is it happens all the time when the announcers clearly hear it over the hot mic. Right. So they're just like, Asia Wilson and Usher. Like, no, reference it. She got mad, man. It happens. Don't take pictures with mother effing Usher.
I love it. And no, it was not Willie she was addressing. It was other players.
Willie does work all day. So she can't say that he hasn't done anything all day. I also can rule out.
Encouraging.
I can rule out that it's Kate Martin because I feel like that girl can do no wrong for that team.
She's like a top five most beloved player
ever.
The fans, the team. Unreal.
I don't think my mom likes me as much as the Las Vegas Aces like her.
Okay, I gotta talk some NBA Summer League because John's the guy to lean on. I got some observations, and I want your observations. Last night, Donovan Clingan, Blazers, 7-2, 285. Alexander Sarr, number one pick.
Number two.
Check that. Number two. Risache?
Zachary Risache, yep.
Sarr goes 0 for 15 and 0 for 7 from 3?
Yep.
Oh, boy.
Not great, Bob.
It is summer league.
Right.
Can I tell you I can handle that? And all I'm going to base my positive vibes about Sarr is on, one, his shot form is good. He looks like he has range. He is athletic. I like the way he runs the floor. Now, I don't know if he's going to be a rim protector at 7 foot, but he looks to have at least maturity from a development standpoint to turn into a good player.
Yeah.
The results aren't always going to be there early.
Well, no, and he's a developmental prospect on offense, like 100%. He doesn't have a clean offensive game. He looks really awkward. There was a moment against Portland where he had the ball in the open court, and Donovan Clingan forced him to pick up his dribble at half court because he was just, like, really awkward about getting by a guy just in the middle of the floor. Those are things that are going to get fixed with time. And by all accounts, part of the reason why he wanted to go to Washington is because the Wizards were going to allow him to do that. He wanted to have the ball in his hands. He wanted that Giannis-esque type role. And I think you're also fine with it just because, I don't know how much you've watched him, but he's shown flashes defensively. He's shown what you expected of him defensively. coming over, helping, blocking shots, running in transition. There's been a couple of lazy moments on defense. You're going to get that from time to time. But if you – like, if you he was going out there and getting destroyed on defense and doing this stuff on offense over the course of three games, then you're like, oh, boy. But the fact that he's shown his flashes on defense, like, you're not going to freak out. But this is what we do. We freak out, and we just point and laugh, and it's kind of annoying, to be honest with you.
There's a lot of freakouts over the years in 20 years of the Summer League. Trust me, don't do it.
And it's both ways. I can show you footage of Ben Wilson hitting – or Ben Wilson. Ben Simmons hitting fadeaway jumpers and pulling up from three in Summer League in this very gym. He looked incredible. And then he never took another jump shot the rest of his career.
I told you my story early on. And he wasn't healthy. He had a turned ankle. I didn't know it at the time. I came in after watching a young point guard. And I was like, I don't see it. Too small. Doesn't have it. Chris Paul.
Best one.
It's a pretty good call. I don't know.
I missed a little bit.
I don't really like his game.
I missed a little bit.
Hall of Famer.
Give me some other standouts, or I'll give them to you. One, for Markkanen, who has to be the centerpiece, reportedly, for Utah to deal him to GSW?
So apparently I was actually listening to Zach Lowe's podcast today, and part of the reporting it does seem is that, like, they want the whole kit and caboodle. So it'd be like Kuminga, Pajemski, and Moses Moody, as well as some picks. Obviously, the Warriors aren't going to do that. So it would seem that they're going to try to meet in the middle.
Who's the no-touch? Is Pajemski the guy they won't deal?
Dude, it seems like it. And I think Pajemski's good, but I don't know if it's, like, absolutely untouchable, we will not do it for Lowry Markkanen type good. I mean, maybe he is, and he was a very solid role player for them. I would think Jonathan Kuminga is a little bit more untouchable, but the problem is Kuminga's up to get paid, and Pajemski is not. So I think that makes Pajemski a little bit more valuable, but it seems that they are pretty dug in on not dealing Pajemski if you're reading the tea leaves.
Bulls, 11th pick in this draft. Have you watched this kid?
Matis Bezelis? A little bit.
6'9", skinny as hell.
Yep. I've watched more of his G League
the other
stuff.
Day.
Yep.
Whew.
He's got
freaking
skill.
Posterizing.
Got a good skill set. And if his 3-point shot comes back, because he was a good 3-point shooter in high school, it disappeared for the G League Ignite, but the Ignite also stunk. Like, they were not good, and the season fell apart. But if his 3-point shot comes back, he's going to be awesome. He's going to be a really good piece. Now, why would Chicago deal for? Are you alleging Chicago?
No.
Oh, okay.
No,
okay.
I was just talking about him being a standout, gotcha. And I'd seen the hammer dunk, and I see he's putting up numbers here.
Yeah.
And I had no idea when I was watching him. I was like, and then I was looking him up, like 6'9".
Yeah.
Okay.
He was supposed to go fifth. I mean, Detroit, by all accounts, really wanted him with the fifth overall pick. That obviously didn't come to fruition. Like, he is, if you're using the pre-draft assessments as your measuring point, he was one of the better steals of the draft for Chicago. To go all the way down to, I think, what was it, 8, 9? Yeah, and for them to get him in that spot where many people had thought that Detroit, because there were some familial ties, I think, like, his agent is the son of somebody in the front office, something like that. Like, by all accounts, he looks like he's supposed to be a good upside guy that should have been top five, and you get him 8.
You mentioned having a beef with our previous guest, Carmichael Dave out of Sacramento. Does sports radio there. What happened? I'm sure I was around when this happened.
You were. I was your producer because he even mentions you. So it was the day of – I remember where I tweeted this. I was sitting on the couch of my in-laws out in Merced, California.
This is a Twitter beef.
Yeah. So it was during the fake – for anybody who remembers the infamous Chuck Pagano fake punt, where they line up just two guys out there on the field and they snap the ball and Griff Whalen gets tackled. Like, and it was absolutely ridiculous. So after that happens, Carmichael Dave tweets out, said it before the season and I'll say it again, Chuck Pagano will not be coaching the Colts next year. And at the time, everybody had expected that to be the case. Pagano was going to get fired. So I wanted to bust his chops, so I retweeted him. I said, you're really going down a limb with this hot take. Like, that was it. Like, I'm busting your chops, but obviously I'm poking fun at you. He responds with immediately gets angry. First off, shut it. Second, there were piles of peeps saying that before the season. Third, stop being butthurt over your lame team. So, like, to which I did fire back. And I said, the dude gets out coached on national television, and that's your take. Something that's been known since the offseason. Try again. To which he then responded.
Oh, you guys went back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
Thank God you weren't here for the interview.
He said, he got it to me twice, and then I just stopped. He said, go take your meds and recover from the loss instead of picking fights. Not like I was lobbing the hot take candidate at you, you stupid moron. That was my take before the season. I wasn't first, but it was far from a majority. How does Cofield deal with you?
Oh, my God. That's good. And sadly, like me, you never forget.
No, I mean, that was funny, though.
Yeah,
like,
I know, but
it's not like a place of, like, oh, I hate Carmichael.
You're like, I got him.
Yeah.
I got him. That's the whole goal in this freaking thing, right? Giveaway time, 364-1100. Caller 7, caller 7, caller 7. Monster Jam 6, Thomas and Mac. Got the big trucks, Gravedigger. Freestyle, skills, racing competitions. You can get your tickets at UNLVtickets.com, UNLVtickets.com. Saturday the 27th, Monster Jam 6. Griffin's going to hook you up. 364-1100, caller 7. Caleb Herring is on the way. And, yes, both of us are still watching. Hard Knocks offseason and Giants brass continues to just I don't even know how they let this out. It's a reality show. You probably have editorial control. Delete some of the stuff. It's ugly.
Former UNLV quarterback and current voice of the Rebels, Caleb Herring, joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Final half hour, Cofield and Company. Lot to get to. Lot to get to. NBA Summer League goes all the way through the 22nd. UNLVtickets.com. John Von Tobel is the company today, giving us a couple days. Thank you. Appreciate it, because I know you're doing double duty and getting up at like 2 in the morning. How are you feeling? You fired up?
Yeah, I actually got a nap in today, so I have reached double-digit hours of sleep for this week.
Let's do another tease and see if we can not deliver on it. I want to hear about your free roll gambling thing after Caleb, but we got to bring in Caleb Herring. We don't have to. We want him on. Caleb is with us, former UNLV quarterback. Right, Caleb? Like, we got to do this.
Yeah, no, I twist your arm every week to make sure that you bring me back. I've got some blackmail.
Not really. We love having you on, and you're super cooperative with interaction. I love to get topics from our guests, so we're all in a good flow. Well, you and I were trading some messages on Hard Knocks with the Giants. I'm going to let you go on – you start wherever you want to go, man, and I'll react, and I got more stuff. I'm so as a Jets fan to be watching – and finding out why the Giants are the Giants.
It's like watching a train wreck that you can't really turn away from because you want to see how it ends. Like you want to see that final car tumble off the track. And as always, though, the production quality on Hard Knocks is fantastic. And that's really a part of what keeps you coming back and watching. Like this last episode with the poker table reference and like the creative way of explaining how the free agency negotiations work. Like, visually, it was great to watch. And, like, the mystery, even, like, setting up the whole Saquon Barkley. Like, after episode 2, everybody was like, oh, Saquon lied. They did try to over it. And then now it's like, wait a minute. What was that? Like, going back and forth to trying to figure out who the bad guy is between Saquon and the Giants organization has been a roller coaster of some sorts. But I'm here for all of it because there's a half of me that's looking at this and saying there's no way that NFL franchises are run this way. That is this informal, that these people make this much money to do this business, and it's this unorthodox, uncoordinated, unplanned, off-the-cuff type of stuff that's happening. Part of me says that. Then the other part of me is like, well, maybe there's just such a comfortability with this vernacular, with this terminology, that they're just throwing these figures out. This is how it always goes. You just get lucky sometimes. Sometimes you don't really have a plan when you come into these negotiations. You just throw something out there and see if it catches. Like episode 3, there's like a segment where there's a lot of money riding on one player, and they completely freeze all other free agency talks with all the roster updates they need to focus on this one guy. And it's like just to see that behind the scenes. I don't know that a lot of teams are going to be up for it next time around, but teams haven't been up for Hard Knocks since Hard Knocks started. So it's still going to happen if we want to see it. And I do. I want to see more of this. I just want to know what team I get to look into next. And I also want to know if this is going to get somebody fired. Like, if this show coming out and people being able to see the dysfunction in an organization like this, does this put pressure on people's jobs in the future? I don't know, but I'm here for it. I'm 3 episodes in. I'm invested, and I want more.
Well, one thing's for sure. Owner John Mara, Giants owner John Mara, ain't going to fire himself, but he might want to. I don't get it. Again, he comes from a legacy family. He comes from money. First of all, every time he walks in the room, I don't understand what he's saying. Open your mouth. The mumbling, and I'm a mumbler. I'm like, John, please.
It's like having a granddad that's in your family that only the family understands what he's saying. But when like people come over, they, like everybody's like, oh, he's fine. He just wants some more ketchup. like whatever.
But his take on Saquon repeatedly is so typical of the Giants of the last 5 years, because I thought they misplayed the whole deal with Eli Manning down the stretch and let him control playing time too much. And John Mara, he is freaking out because he's like, Saquon is our most popular guy. Like, I think he really is suggesting, hey, we got to go. You know, we got to get to like 40, 42 million. We got to give him the, you know, guaranteed 28 million. I mean, he's, you know, like basically we're going to lose in the PR game. And it's like, that's not how you run a football organization.
And I think that's one of the more telling parts about the episode to me. It was like, that was the clearest it's been. You know, you speculate all the time that there's the business side and then there's the football side. And that was like the clearest moment. It was like in a like a Freudian slip almost. It's like just referencing Saquon Barkley as not the best player we have, not the best offensive threat, but saying he's the most popular player we have is framing him in a business context and saying he sells a lot of jerseys, he gets talked about a lot, he brings attention, he sells tickets, blah, blah, blah. All the business stuff that goes into why you should keep Saquon and why you want to sell out to keep him, and just ignoring the whole salary cap roster building that actually gets you wins on the field. And that kind of pressure for a GM, you're torn in between those two worlds. Like, here you have the president CEO telling you, this guy's great for our market, but you're listening to your coach say, we can't afford him because you need to build an offensive line. So that's how a lot of these decisions get made, unfortunately. And, you know, just to, not to change topics, but that's, you look at the Lakers and what they're doing. You imagine that there's a lot of those business conversations that are determining what they're going to do with their pickups in free agency. So it's crazy to see it, but I love that insight was given. One, because presidents and owners of teams don't usually get any screen time. Like, you don't see them doing any of their job. Like, you always wonder like what they do. And I guess this is what they do. Like, what John's doing is just, he's popping to me and says, hey, we can use Saquon, and then head down the hall again. Is that what life of an owner is? Like, seems like it, but, I mean, you get that insight of the business side as well as the football side while watching the behind the scenes, and I think that's what's cool about this season of Hard Knocks.
So I should watch it?
Yeah, it's different than all the others. It's team building, and like Caleb said, the whole image of the poker thing, and then you get to kind of judge what they're doing in free agency. Like, it looks to me like the GM, Joe Shane, is kind of in it, but he's having others negotiate on his behalf and report to him. And I came away thinking they got played on both of the linemen they got. Like, tell me, Caleb, did you think on both Illuminor and Runyon, like, it almost felt like the Giants had to overpay the competition, which, if I'm a Giants fan, I'm like, wait, all the tradition here, and we're being used to have guys overpaid?
Yeah, and you look at the teams that they're pulling these guys from. Like, you're pulling from the Raiders. They're not a contending team. So it's like the effort to negotiate or to sell seems like very much about the dollar value. And I think that if that's the way you want to do business, and I think in a non-salary cap league, you probably could do business like that. Hey, we're willing to spend more money, so that's why you should come to us. I think there's other things you could sell. And I think one of the things for an offensive lineman that you could have sold was probably keeping Saquon and having Saquon in the backfield. And that would have been solid to hear as an offensive lineman. But those kind of things used to leverage is instead of just getting at the bidding wars when you know you have so many different spots to fill. But yeah, it did seem like that. Like, it was just all about, hey, the money, like, what did they offer him? Match it. Go back and match it. That's it. And if that's all these negotiations are, then you want the NFL to not be a cap league in some sense. But then it also adds to the drama because there's only a finite amount of resources. If not for the salary cap, these NFL teams have enough money to pay guys more than they could imagine they could make playing football. But the salary cap does make it interesting. And I don't think a team like the Giants or one of these legacy football teams in the NFL should rely so heavily on just the financial aspect. Now, especially going to New York when you're heavily taxed up there. So there's all kinds of financial incentives to take away from whatever the bonuses or guarantees that you end up signing them to. So, but I did think it was kind of strange that was the only thing. And then, again, you don't really see who's doing the negotiating. There's, like, different guys assigned to these players that are negotiating on a GM's behalf, and that's just not what I envisioned happening. And then it makes sense how there's, like, this nepotism in the GM world, I guess, where these guys come out of nowhere, and you're like, who are you? Maybe they're just one of these guys that have negotiated so many deals on behalf of a GM, and they get a reputation for, oh, this guy's a closer, make him a GM now, and he promotes up because of that. So, I don't know, things like that. It's cool to watch, but it just raises a lot more questions about these tactics and how free agency actually works and how much leverage these players are actually having in free agency.
All right, let's transition to college football. Jeff Tedford steps down over at Fresno State. UNLV has now four of the new head coaches in the conference on its schedule. You can say four and a half with Danielson, but they played him last year. So is this an advantage for Barry Odom and the Rebels, or is this a disadvantage?
I think in the case of the Rebels, it's an advantage because they have a system that's complicated to prepare for, more so than anything, and both sides of the ball, defensively and offensively. So other teams having to figure themselves out and try to figure out the Rebels' functions is I think, a disadvantage to the opponents more than anything. So a new coach coming in trying to get his own culture or playbook established is probably not going to be too happy about trying to figure out the go-go or the 3-3-5 in its second year with UNLV and some of the exotic looks that we started to see towards the end of the season. But I do think it's an advantage. And I will say, though, you say that with caution because the Mountain West is no stranger to having first-year head coaches have massive success. I know, you know, not too long ago, Blake Anderson was that guy at Utah State. Came in and won a conference championship in year one. And obviously last year, Barry Odom was able to have a very solid season with UNLV getting to the Mountain West Championship in year one. So just because he's a first-year coach doesn't mean it's a shoe-in. Doesn't mean you're going to just waltz in and get a victory. But there are factors. And I think you said it best, especially in the case of Tedford and Fresno State yesterday. Or you mentioned that Tedford was one of those coaches that got you wins at the margin. So not having him for Fresno State, there's a lot of close ball games, including against UNLV, that might go a different way if you don't have the right guy to help. Now, for Fresno State and, you know, Wyoming, they have people that were on staff stepping in to replace. In the case of Fresno State, Tim Skipper's taken over as interim. He's been around Fresno State as a player, as an assistant for years in the past. So he's going to be, you know, familiar to Fresno State. So it might not be that big of a drop-off, but it's just going to be different not having the touch of Tedford, not just for Fresno State, but for college football. I mean, he's had a legacy in college football that's pretty impressive when you look at his track record at Oregon, going back to his days at Cal, and obviously what he did at Fresno State in the Mountain West. He was great. So he'll be missed, but I think UNLV will be happy to not be facing him this season.
3 minutes left with Caleb Herring, so let's go rapid fire. I got one. Caleb's got two. John's got two. We started bouncing around this notion. The portal opens for both Utah State this week and in a couple of days Fresno State. Players could leave if they want. If you were, say, USC, and you're like, you know what, we like our quarterback situation, but Mikey Keene's really good. $300,000 for Mikey Keene. Let's make a run. If you're Mikey Keene, would you leave? It's pretty late.
Well, if I'm Mikey Keene and somebody offers me that much, I probably do. To be honest, I'd say I would consider it heavily. I don't know what his draft status would be going into next year. I don't know what his aspirations are to play at the next level. But if USC is offering some ungodly amount of NIL that I haven't been offered in Fresno, yeah, I might entertain the idea. For USC to offer it, though, on the flip side, I don't think USC should offer this late in the game because I don't think you're really getting any value. At this point, if he comes in and beats out the two guys that you already have, your problems are a lot bigger at USC than just your quarterback spot. You should have had the guys that you have ready to start. So him coming in this late into the game and competing realistically for the start would be a problem, in my opinion. So I don't think USC should do it, but if they do, I would definitely entertain it if I'm Mikey Keene.
I bet UNLV and Wyoming to win the conference.
Wyoming.
What do you think?
You love Wyo.
I do.
Yeah, Wyoming football is a very traditional thing, although they're kind of getting it new. I don't mind it. I obviously UNLV being mentioned is cool for me, but I can't ignore Boise. I really can't call it. There's so much change that I think happened, and the carnage might get a little bit extensive by the end of the year. And of course, Air Force is always Air Force, so I won't count them out. I do like UNLV's chances, and as I learn about how Wyoming is after bowl, then I will probably make a more solid decision. I'm not very good at predictions. I'm a more wait and see guy, but I like UNLV being a strong contender for the conference championship.
Caleb, up against it, man. We appreciate your time. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right, guys. Take care.
There he is, Caleb Herring, co-host of the Barry Odom Radio Show, one of the voices of UNLV football. Rebels' odds to win are?
8-1.
Wyoming's odds to win are?
15-1.
Okay, I figured. You're getting value.
I mean, by my measure, yes, I would say that they're value. I like what – I keep forgetting. Whitak? Right? Is that how you pronounce his name over there, Wyoming? I like what he's bringing in. I mean, you got about 14 guys coming back, their entire D-line, top three rushers, should be good. And don't sleep on it. Boise's confident. They got to go out there in November. It's going to be a tough one out there in altitude. Laramie's going to – oh, boy, they're going to wreak havoc. The Cowboys are going to win this conference.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from NBA Summer League on ESPN Las Vegas.
Wrapping up our portion of the day in a couple of minutes, but basketball all night long is it's another Bronny night, Lakers night. Albert Hall is here from the Summer League. What's going on, buddy?
I'm loving that NBC music right there.
Right?
You know, it's back. That's good stuff.
Yes. All right, we were talking Bronny during the break. One, he's been a draw. That's a good thing for you guys.
Sure. Yeah, he's been great.
His play. Now, we were just talking during the break. We've seen a lot of guys here over the years. You know, you write them off. You overreact. He's in a really weird position.
He is, and he's handling it well. Let me just start with that. I mean, the pressure this young man has is immense. He's handled it well. You can tell he's been around the game for a long time. So even his father said, you know, look, he's pretty even keeled. You know, he doesn't get too up, too down. Me personally, I've seen him play for a number of years in high school, and he was an ascending player at the end of his high school career. You throw anybody into a heart issue, a dysfunctional team, in my opinion, with, you know, players, coaches leaving, all kinds of stuff, and it wasn't healthy. So, you know, I think this has been good. He's established himself as a rotational guy for their summer league team. He knows he's going to have to work, and all indications are he's not afraid of the work. So I'm pulling for him. I think he steps up. I think he starts to prove. Look, I don't think he'll be a superstar, but I think he can be a very serviceable player over time.
I keep making the case to Steve, too, that I think he found the perfect organization. Dad aside, Lakers have a strong track record of drafting and developing guys. You look all around the league, there's a ton of dudes who originally wore a Laker uniform that are good players.
And they just have a tough time of keeping them, right? Yeah. I mean, if you looked at Kuzma and Ingram and Randall and, I mean, Paul, all these guys that they've had heart. Right, I mean, those are the kind of guys that are winning player. Well, maybe not all of them, but I mean, you can win with them,
right?
And the talent level was there. You know, I think the other thing too is some familiarity with it doesn't hurt in this situation. Dad's obviously larger than life, so the pressure can be there. But he knows the routine. He knows the guys around the training facility. I think they're all pulling for him.
UNLVtickets.com is where you can get your NBA Summer League tickets through the 22nd. There's so much interactive stuff on the concourse and around the building. We're right near the experience. Other stuff around the building that people would be, aside from the basketball on the floor in two different gyms, what else is a big draw here?
It's pretty cool, huh?
I think it's awesome.
It's been amazing, and we've actually had, you know, some come and go, and we have others adding. But you start with our partner 2K Sports, you know, the launch of the video game. The 24-25 thing is always a little confusing, but the launch of the game is our title sponsor, the new game, right? So having those there, we've got an NBA interactive Plinko thing to get measured up with your NBA ID and win prizes, get seat upgrades. We've got our studio going here, which I walked in the other morning, 9 o'clock in the morning. You've got Udonis Haslam, Max Crosby, and Mike Miller, you know, just breaking it down on a show on their OG pod. Yesterday, Pat Bev. So you have a chance to see those guys, you know, doing their thing off the court, which we all know there's a ton of players here. But also the jerseys, the sneaker lab, you know, design your own shoes, a variety of art installations that kids around the community have done. And I mean, what we're trying to show is that we're not those guys that just come in and are here for two, three weeks and leave.
Right.
We're here forever. You know, we're here 365. We have an office here. Our community relations footprint is massive. And we give back, but we also honor all those people. You know, we have teachers coming in tonight, Noche Latina, Hispanic. Last night was coaches. So we're recognizing those folks that have helped us get here.
So at the top of the draft, we had two players who aren't necessarily household names, right? They're not the guys we used to watch on Saturdays and Wednesdays, Thursdays, whatever, and then go on to the NBA. How does that affect you guys? Where generally you want the top two guys. People draw in. They want to see the top two guys. Is there an effect in that regard in terms of draw when it's, you know, two guys that played overseas?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, this year for sure the familiarity is not there. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously Bronny's a second-round pick and he's social, but, you know, Reed Sheppard has been a real nice surprise, a nice little draw.
It's been awesome.
But one, two, you generally want that. beggars can't be choosers. We'll take this. I mean, we saw the Bronny thing, but, you know, then you look at next year with Cooper Flagg and Boozers and these guys. I mean, it's going to be loaded, right? And that, I have a feeling all those guys are like, hey, who's number one? I'm number one. But I watched Cooper play over at the U.S. Select a little bit, and he definitely belongs.
He looks awesome. Like, I thought physically mature, like his body. I was expecting Chet Holmgren, right? He's spindly, dude, limbs. No. The kid's built it. He's only 17.
Yeah, he's got broad shoulders, strong. And I mean, he runs, got a high motor. You a guy like that, you know the skills are just going to get better and better.
You know, we should also point out, I know the first round of the draft this year is a draw, but really some of the best players here are second and third year guys. And 100%. I'll bring up one who's a local, Julian Strother. Got some playing time, but, you know, Michael Malone may now, you know, be in love with young guys, and they have high expectations.
Yeah.
He was good the first two games. Like, I think he's going to be a player. Like, he's going to take another leap here in the second year.
He can shoot. Yep. He can shoot, and he has size. Yeah, I mean, those are two good combinations, especially when you play around winning players. So you're not looking for that guy to come in and, hey, you got to take it off the dribble and, you know, go get 20. It's like, no, you make open shots, you're going to get them. You know, he's played at a high level, whether it was Gonzaga, AU, whatever. But he's got a great feel. He's a cerebral player. So Julian's done well. I mean, Jaime Jaquez is a stud. I mean, you know, some of these guys. It was nice to see Brandon Miller play a couple games. You know, Brandon is.
That's surprising.
Yeah, people forget the last month of the season, he really played well. He came on. And I think that's a good sign of, look, he's turned a corner from a leadership. And like we tell these kids early on, it's like the quicker you learn how to be a pro, the more success you're going to have. And I think that's part of what he's trying to do is lead by example. You know, their whole team was over there at that game at 3 o'clock today.
Albert Hall's with us. JBT, Cofield. Albert is in charge of the NBA Summer League. And just, you know, quick point on Miller. And, again, to the second and third year reference, don't forget, guys are 18, 19, 20 sometimes when we're coming here. We all fill out. Some of us too much. But, you know, Miller's trying to play in the NBA like 200 pounds.
Yeah.
And now you can see he's bigger.
He's bigger, stronger. Especially bigs. You know, bigs, yep. Summer League's not conducive to seeing the best performances from bigs. You know, they may not get a touch the seven straight possessions, right? But, I mean, you look at these guys from year to year. They develop. Even you look around, and we have a measuring on the wall with Wemby. And
I did it, yeah.
You just look at him, though, and it's like he looks bigger, right? He looks more like David Robinson now than Wemby we saw, who was a young, skinny kid. I mean, he's just going to be an incredible player. That game last night was good to see. You know, the New Orleans San Antonio game was very competitive. Brandon Hawkins, another kid who came back, you know, second-year guy. But you like to see those guys take a leap. I mean, Podzinski was he looked every bit the part. Like, wow, speed, the shot. I heard, you know, he was talking a little smack playing against the guys over there. Like, hey, I'm ready. We can play at this level. And Jamal Mosley did a piece for us yesterday who coached that team. Like, one of the huddles broke, and the guys came back and said, man, we can play with these guys. Come on. You know, which is good to see, and, you know, but if you think about it, practice, three quarters, they're right. They're all on the same level. It's that fourth quarter. It's that clutch time where the veterans show up, the guys who say, hey, I'm a killer, they take over, and they close games.
I got to mention, we got like 30 seconds left. When you guys came here, we had some stuff. We didn't have a whole lot. So I got to say again, what the NBA has done for Vegas, and eventually I think we're going to get a team, but now we got NFL, MLB is on the horizon. I mean, you guys were one of the starts of this whole thing.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, we like to think we softened the beach a little bit for some of these other guys. We took it on the chin the first few years, but there's no doubt. We feel a part of that landscape. I mean, as Adam said, the 31st franchise, and who knows what's on the horizon, but we're excited about it.
Yep. So are we. Multiple arenas competing to get an NBA team. It's crazy here. It's crazy. Albert, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate the support, as always. And hopefully we can finish this thing strong, have a good little run towards the championship.
Bronny tonight. Lakers in the building tonight. So come on over to UNLVtickets.com. Thanks to Mateo. Thanks to Caleb Herring, who popped on earlier. Carmichael Dave. John, you're running all around town. I appreciate you doing that. I want an update. We'll have to do it off the air about your big betting caper. I want to find out who you have odds-wise. All right, that'll do it. We'll send it back to the studio. We are out of here, but tonight, Bronny and the Lakers at the Thomas and Mack. Get your tickets now. Come on down, UNLVtickets.com.